You're listening to Colt Gennaro Chat, the only weekly English language podcast dedicated to Atletico Madrid and the official podcast of Into the Calderon, the SB Nation home for all things Atletico. I'm Jeremy Barron. My guest on this edition of Colt Gennaro Chat is Spanish football journalist Ewan McTeer. Ewan McTeer is the guest on this edition of Colt Gennaro Chat. Ewan joins me to discuss Atletico's 2-1 win at Athletic Club de Bilbao on Wednesday. Another win at San Mamés for Atleti. Another win against Athletic for Diego Simeone. Topics of discussion include another strong second half performance from Los Colchoneros. Of Atleti's 10 goals this season, 8 have come in the second half. We'll try to pinpoint why that is. Also, Jan Oblak making another stunning penalty save as he continues his ascendancy up the goalkeeping ladder. Is he now the world's best goalkeeper? Finally, the early beneficiaries of Diego Simeone's new rotation policy, which includes Lucas Hernandez, Tomas Partey, and Angel Correa, one of the goal scorers, on Wednesday. Of course, we have to talk about the Diego Costa news, which broke very early Arizona time. We'll analyze the end to the saga, whether Atleti ended up getting a good deal for their former hitman, and whether said hitman will be ready to go in January and perhaps help Atleti to glory this season. Before we continue, a couple housekeeping notes as usual. You can like Into the Calderon on Facebook at facebook.com/IntoTheCalderon. You can find Colt Gennaro Chat on your favorite podcasting platform, iTunes, Stitcher, Acast, Google Play, TuneIn. Those are your options. If you subscribe on iTunes, please leave a rating and a review. Helps our visibility, helps us get seen. And finally, Colt Gennaro Chat has a Patreon page where you can support the show and get some pretty cool benefits. Patreon.com/ColtGenneroChat. Again, that address, patreon.com/ColtGenneroChat. We'll be back with Ewan McTeer after this. Here, well, I did want to start by talking about your book, but Atleti have gone and screwed that up, haven't they?
Yeah, some big news today, finally.
Yes.
You know, the one we've been waiting all summer for, even after deadline day, Thibaut Courtois tweeted that he's going to Cicada, but yeah, ultimately not.
He did not Cicada. No, he very much did not. Yeah, this finally ends the transfer saga that had me checking my phone first thing every morning. And so it's nice to not do that anymore.
Yeah, and we should probably point out that he is Diego Costa for anyone who hasn't worked it out
yet.
This is obviously the signing that Simeone wanted. He only really wanted two players this summer. Obviously, he couldn't register them this summer, but the two players he reportedly wanted were Vitolo and Diego Costa. And, fair play to the club. They've delivered, and on January 1st, they'll both be ready for him.
Yeah, they delivered in kind of the most Atletico way they could. They delivered. You know, it took them a very long time, nearly screwed up both signings, but in the end, what matters is it got done. And it doesn't
always they delivered. It got lost at the post office, sent back again via Brazil, but eventually, a flight is expected in Madrid and it should all be delivered.
Eventually it got there. Yeah, 3 weeks after the close of the window, Atletico and Chelsea both confirming this morning that Diego Costa is set to return to Madrid. He will fly in, reportedly will fly in on Saturday. He'll have his medical, he'll sign his contract, and he'll start training next week, which is good because he hasn't played football in more than 100 days. So Atleti need to get him back to match fitness.
Yeah, and luckily, you know, Atletico have one of the best fitness coaches around in Profi Ortega. You know, genuinely one of the best in Europe. And yeah, if anyone can get Costa up to speed and match fit within, you know, and we do have to remember there's a good 3 months for him to get, you know, up to speed. So he should be able to lose some of that holiday weight by by the time January comes around. Hopefully he doesn't put it all back on for Christmas, but
yeah
he should be ready for January and should really strengthen Atletico for that second half of the season push. And he's not played any minutes for Chelsea in the Champions League, so he'll be available for that.
Correct. He will not be cup tied at Atleti. Chelsea did not register him in their Champions League squad, so we're all good there. Yeah, if he tries to gain any weight during the holidays again, yeah, Simeone's just going to have him on a leash. That's not going to happen. It's just not a thing that's going to happen. He's not going to allow it.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, it finally ends this wretchedly long saga. And It looks like Atleti are set to pay over 50 million euros for Costa, which smashes their previous most expensive transfer, which was Radamel Falcao in 2011. The fee is supposed to be between 50 and 60 million, and Atleti are going to be paying Costa's wages. Chelsea refused to pay them. From the financial standpoint, do you think Atleti should have gotten a better deal? Or considering the current financial climate, this was a good deal for both sides?
Yeah, I think you have to look at the way the summer the market's changed, and it's maybe a little bit regrettable that they didn't push earlier in the summer to get Costa when he was maybe cheaper. I think they maybe thought that if they waited, then Chelsea would have had no option but to sell, and that's proven true. But no option but to sell at a completely different transfer market than it was just 3 months ago. Pre Neymar, there really was a mass before and after then. And you know, when the Conte text message first came out, I mean, the talk then was of a deal, you know, more around kind of 40 million euros, and the transfer market has just changed so much that maybe Atletico have paid the price literally for sort of waiting out those first few months rather than just getting on the phone with Chelsea and saying, okay, here's the check for 40 odd million euros, let's have them.
Yeah, I think that's right. And we got to remember, like, Higuain went to Juve for 90 million last summer. Mm-hmm. And Atleti are going to get Costa for about two-thirds of that, a little less. The market is just so crazy, especially this summer. The Neymar transfer, as I've said before, just kind of changed everything, like, literally. So 50, 60 million in this climate was, you know, closer to 40 million a couple years ago. Costa going for less than 40 million in 2014 seems like a bargain now. So I think we do have to consider that. That said, I also think there's an argument that Atleti should have done this a lot earlier. I have argued that before, that it was kind of embarrassing that it went on for this long, especially when Chelsea had Costa's replacement secured 2 months ago, and Atleti just decided to keep waiting things out. I mean, I'm not sure we'll ever know for sure if Atleti could have paid less. They could have gotten a better deal. But I guess what matters is that Costa is now, you know, he's now a Colchonero. Who do you think? Well, obviously, we had three parties here, and I don't think any of them handled this saga, this 3 month journey well. Who do you think handled it the best between Costa, Atleti, and Chelsea? Who did the best, in your opinion?
I think the one who's done the best in the end of it all is probably Costa. I mean, he wanted to go back to Atletico Madrid. He probably wanted to do that even before he found out he wasn't wanted at Chelsea. And he's been able to, you know, get some good quality family time for, like you mentioned, 100 days. And at the end of it all, he gets what he wants. He's not losing out. He's not out of pocket. He's not losing any money. So I think both of the clubs are the ones who maybe lose out in this, you know. Atletico obviously paying a little bit more than they maybe had to. Chelsea sort of got a little bit messy for a while during the summer. But Costa, in the end, he's going to be where he wants. And he misses out 6 months of football. You know, you'd hope for his sake that doesn't cost him a spot in the World Cup squad. But if he can get back to fitness, get a good handful of goals, get into, you know, double figures in that sort of second half of the season, getting the World Cup squad, then, you know, it looks like a really good move on his part.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. I mean, if anything, Costa is incredibly determined, as we know, and he has the kind of personality that he will try very hard to hit the ground running. He'll work very hard over the next few months. Atleti will get him into shape. He'll get himself into shape. And just looking at January and all the options that Simeone is going to have in attack, you now have Costa to partner with Griezmann up top, as well as Griezmann and Correa have played. You also have Correa still, but as well as Griezmann and Correa have played, Costa and Griezmann seems like a more natural, more dynamic partnership. You have Vitolo coming in January as well. Yannick Carrasco is still in the team, so you have a lot of options for January and an attack that could be much improved.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I think Atletico fans have been longing to see this sort of Griezmann-Costa partnership ever since 2014, really, when Griezmann came in just as Costa left. And I think you know, it took Griezmann a little while to get settled, but once he did, I think people were sort of wondering, wow, what if Griezmann had been here, you know, at the same time as Costa, and they will finally get to see that and see how they link up, and hopefully they do form quite a good partnership. And you know, if Costa can sort of play that sort of Kevin Gamero role from last season, but just do it a little bit better, then it's definitely very, very exciting for Simeone and everyone involved.
Indeed, but it's going to be a long 3 months waiting for Costa and Vitolo as well to get registered and seeing them in the team. But no doubt it is pretty exciting, regardless of, you know, how you feel about the saga and how you feel about how all three parties handle themselves. It's pretty exciting, and Atleti look like they're going to have a lot of variety in attack, a lot of options. It's going to be fun. It should be fun. I'm hoping it's fun. But that is still a few months away. Let's go now to more recent events, such as events that took place earlier this week in La Liga Match Day 5. Let's do the whip around real quick. On Monday, Espanyol beat Celta Vigo 2-1, but that was part of Match Day 4. Espanyol recovering somewhat from the Catalan derby disaster. On Tuesday, Valencia pounding Malaga 5-0. Simone Zaza scoring a hat trick in 8 minutes, because why not? Malaga are in really big trouble, Ewan. No wins in five. They lost all five games. They've scored once. They've conceded 11. Oi, this is bad.
Yeah, it really is, and really bad for former Atleti canterano Borja Bastón.
Yep.
He had that really great year with Ibar a couple of years ago, moved to Swansea. It really didn't work out there, and I think Malaga sort of expected that, you know, back in a familiar environment, back in La Liga, he'd maybe return to that form he showed 2 years ago, but he really hasn't. And yeah, he was even dropped for that game. I think it was Diego Roland played up front instead of him. And yeah, they're really missing the departure of Sandro from last season, and the fact that their big summer star arrival, Borja Bastón, hasn't really clicked. And because until this Valencia game, the problem hadn't really been defence. You know, they'd lost games 1-0, as we saw last Saturday against Atletico. They'd lost a few 1-0. The problem was scoring goals, but now they can't score, and they were pretty woeful at the back.
It's a pretty bad formula. If you're trying to stay up, it's just not good. It's just not good. Not at all. Barcelona beating Eibar, speaking of, 6-1. Lionel Messi is just on a tear right now. He scored 4 more goals. Barca are top of the table. They look absolutely dominant right now, even though it is early days. On Wednesday, Leganés and Girona playing out a goalless draw. Could be a pretty important point later in the season if those two end up fighting to stay in La Liga. Leganés still off to a pretty decent start. Girona, it could be a pretty important point for them away from home. Depor 1, Alaves 0. Alaves starting life under Javier Cabello, much like it ended under Luis Zubeldia. They lose and they get shut out, as Luisinho scoring Depor's only goal. Sevilla 1, Las Palmas 0. At the Pizjuan. Did Jesus Navas score? Was it an own goal? Who knows? But Sevilla still get the win anyway. Sevilla's fans also relentlessly whistling Vitolo. He had to come off just before the hour mark, as he is recovering from injury, and the howling and the whistling and the wishes of death upon him just got to be too much. It really is shameful behavior, at least in my opinion, and it's really, you never want to go to a football ground and hear that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. It's you sort of it wasn't really a shock, but it was not nice to see at all. And you know, it's never nice when a player leaves a club sort of messily, and you know, it probably was about as messy as it can get, maybe even messier than the whole Costa saga, the way that ended up with him leaving for Atletico via Las Palmas after supposedly agreeing to a new deal. And you can understand the Sevilla fans' frustration, but there's a limit, and some of them probably crossed that last night.
Yeah, there is absolutely a line, I think, that you have to not cross, and I think they did. But whatever the case, Vitolo will not go back to Sevilla until the new year, when he joins Atletico and Atleti go there in January. Finally, before we talk about Atletico, the match of the week, really, the shock of the season, Real Madrid 0, Real Betis 1. Wow, what a game this was. Tony Sanabria in stoppage time against the run of play, a shocking back post header to end Real Madrid, not only end their scoring run at 73 games, but also hand them their first loss of the season.
Yeah, you know, probably will go down as one of the bigger shocks of the season. But yeah, for Kiki Setien, maybe it wasn't a shock, because I remember with his Las Palmas side, they were able to draw with Real Madrid twice last season. So yeah, if you're looking for one way to beat them, maybe it's adopt the sort of Kiki Setien approach of just don't let them have the ball, try and keep it as much as possible. We've seen it work for Barcelona, not in the Supercopa, but in La Liga last year. Barcelona in the individual matches against Real Madrid, keeping the ball seems to work quite well.
I was just so impressed with how composed Betis were at the end of this game. They were assured, they were in control, they were calm. And that's what you have to do if you want to beat a behemoth like this at their building. This is kind of what you have to do. And to their credit, they did it. Ball just would not go in for Real Madrid. They are now 7 points behind Barcelona already.
Yeah, exactly. A really, really poor start for them. And yeah, like you say, you've got to give credit to Betis. I mean, rather than just sort of lump the ball upfield and hope for sort of 20 seconds of respite at the end there, they kept the ball for 69 seconds. I think it was 22 passes and you know, tried to form an attack and they did, and it went in. So yeah, credit to them, and you know, they get the rewards for sort of taking the game to Real Madrid and stoppage time, rather than just sort of parking the bus and hoping to get out there alive.
Yeah, absolutely. Fair play to them. Now, the one result we did not talk about from this week, we have a few more games coming up today, Thursday. But as they have not happened yet, we won't talk about them. Athletic Club de Bilbao 1, Atletico Madrid 2. That is Athletic 1, Atletico 2. Where do you want to start with this one, Ewan? I think we can start at a few different places.
Yeah, I think the best place to start is maybe to look back at last year. And, you know, when you play these big games, you know, there's some stadiums in the league, obviously Barcelona and Real Madrid, but other ones like Sevilla, like Valencia, there's some big stadiums there. Some tricky ones to go to, and Bilbao, San Mames definitely is one. And obviously Atletico really struggled there last year. We're quite lucky, I think, to get away with that 2-2 draw.
Yeah.
So to be able to win this game 2-1 this year maybe shows just sort of a sign of improvement. And the fact it was 2-1, that almost doesn't do justice to how well they played, because, I mean, Atletico's goal was somewhat of a consolation right at the end. And also, you know, there was a Griezmann goal ruled off for offside, and yeah, the refereeing throughout was a little bit in Bilbao's favour with the penalty, which Jan Oblak was obviously able to serve some justice. But to come out of that one with the win, with the 3 points, and to have done so against the 11 men and the referee is a really, yeah, a real statement win.
Yeah, you mentioned the penalty, and I kind of want to turn there, because this was a scandalous call. Honestly,
yeah.
This was not even... When I watched it live, I thought, okay, maybe it is. Maybe Raul García's boot is on the line. Maybe it is. But then you saw it again and again, like, and you're like, how is this even a penalty? That's not even close. Felipe should not have been playing with the ball like he was. And he probably shouldn't have lost it where he lost it. But it was a perfectly clean tackle. Felipe won the ball. Raul García played it up and dove in the box. You know, it was not even close to a penalty. But justice was done.
Not even that, but... you know, it was, even if he had made contact, that was probably outside of the box as well. So
right.
Not only was it that he touched the ball, it was that it probably wasn't even inside. And what was quite interesting, I think, was I don't think it wasn't the referee that called it. It was one of the assistants, which almost made it more.
Oh, it was, wasn't it?
Sort of confusing, because he should have had the better view of that that angle where the players weren't in the way. From the referee's point of view, you could understand why he maybe didn't see it, but. It seemed to be the assistant who called for it, and yeah, he was the one that you would have thought was in the best position to see that there was nothing doing.
Yeah, because the referee delayed his call, and the assistant was standing on the goal line, and he essentially called the penalty, which again was not a penalty, but justice was done, Ewan, as Jan Oblak made a sensational save on Adarid from the spot, his sixth penalty save in the last 10 that have been taken against him. That's an incredible record. This was just, talk about quick reaction, and talk about a powerful save, getting it out of harm's way. Oblak is just, this is just another example of his emergence as a world-class keeper.
Yeah, it's getting to the point, almost like Diego Alves heights, where it probably now starts to play on the mind. You sort of saw a close-up shot of Adewiecz as he was preparing to take it, and there was quite a bit of a delay before he took it, given the protests, and you could sort of see in his face, you know, he didn't look confident at all. He looked at, you know, maybe the sort of, I don't know, it was probably close to about 90 seconds by the time he actually took it. That was probably playing on his mind a little bit, and then also the fact that he knows he's coming up against one of the best penalty savers in the league, in the continent. So, yeah, but kind of, you know, Oblak is obviously really skilled at saving them, but after a while that almost puts strikers off for you. And what we saw with Diego Alves sometimes was players just missed the target completely because they were trying to place it too much because they know they're up against Oblak. So you would hope from an Atletico point of view that going forward there's going to be any penalties that get given against Atletico that it's going to play so much on the striker's mind that they might even hit it wide, hit it off the post, or just hit it into Oblak's arms once again.
Yeah, maybe we are getting to that point. That's already the third penalty Oblak has saved this season. He saved one at the Audi Cup against Napoli. He saved two already in La Liga at Las Palmas and at Athletic on Wednesday. Just sensational stuff. And that kind of turned the game around, I thought, because Atleti to that point had been kind of indifferent, I thought. Nico Gaitán, obviously, just before the penalty, had a shot ring off the post. The guy just cannot catch a break in an Atletico shirt. He really can't. And then Griezmann had a shot that was basically cutting in from the left-hand side. It's an open net. Kepa made a spectacular save to keep it out.
Yeah, it was a weird shot from Griezmann because I think it was a really tight angle, and I think he just went for power rather than precision. But you can't really blame him because to find precision from that angle would have been quite difficult. So maybe it's that kind of thing where you get criticised if you try too hard and hit it off the side netting, and you know the first thing the commentator will say is, you know, he should have hit it on target, and you know that's why he did hit it on target. Maybe you get lucky, maybe you get a rebound if you blast it like that, and you know you didn't get any luck with that chance.
No, he didn't. And Kepa, to his credit, he also put in a really good shift. This was a battle of two really good goalkeepers. I've talked about Kepa before and how I think he's going to be awesome. He already is awesome. He played really well in this game, despite the two goals conceded, neither of which were really his fault. Just two like excellent build-up plays from Atletico, which we'll get to. But yeah, his potential, I think, is just through the roof, and he was pretty clearly Athletic's best player.
I think so, and I think there's an argument to be made that the two best goalkeepers in the league were involved in this game last night, and that maybe makes it all the more surprising that we did see three goals, because it wouldn't have been a shock at all to see this one finish 0-0. But yeah, I think there's an argument to be made that maybe Oblak and Kepa are right now the best two in La Liga.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting a three-goal game, considering how strong Athletic's defenses looked this season with Laporte and Unai Nunez making that partnership at the back. Not expecting to see three goals, and considering how difficult Samames is to play in. The second half, though, Atleti putting in yet another strong second half with two more goals. Of the 10 goals they've scored this season, 8 have come in the second half. Ewan, what is the secret to this second half success?
Well, again, it might be one of the men we talked about earlier, Profi Ortega. I mean, that's been one of the sort of strains for Atletico over the past few years, is just, you know, this superior fitness. And you know, everyone starts the season quite fresh because, you know, we've got fresh legs. But I think in September, especially this midweek round where you know, we've always got this midweek round in the middle of September, it comes just after a Champions League week usually, that's when you start to see which teams are maybe tiring a little bit and which ones are in need of some sort of extra fitness work. And Atletico Madrid definitely didn't look like that, and you saw that all the way up to stoppage time. The way they, once that goal went in, some of the running that they did to hold on to that win, you know, there was almost no tiredness at all in that team. And that's after a few really tough games, and you know, Malaga wasn't that easy at the weekend, you know, tough trip to Roma before that, Valencia as well. It's been a tough run for Atletico, and yeah, they don't seem to be all that tired at all.
Yeah, so far so good. I also think Simeone's rotation policy has played into that. You saw Jose Jimenez come back into the team as the right back in this game. Stefan Savic started next to Diego Godin. Tomas played the entire 90 minutes. Nico Gaitán got a start. Simeone is making what appears to me to be a concerted effort to work more guys in, because Simeone always has liked a small squad. But within that small squad, his starting 11 has usually picked itself. Right now, that's not the case. And I think that's also helping.
Yeah, I think so. Especially interesting is to see how little Gabby's playing, and I guess that maybe makes sense with Sevilla and Chelsea both on the horizon, and Gabby's not the spring chicken he once was. He probably can't play 90 minutes all every week, especially twice a week. So yeah, Simeone's maybe looking after his older players, and it is an aging squad. I think we've talked about this before. So maybe you are going to have to rest Godin every couple of months, or maybe he'll get suspended every couple of months. That tends to happen, and give him a good rest anyway. But yeah, like you said, Simeone is definitely purposely trying to rotate his team a little bit more than maybe in previous seasons, and I guess that makes sense given how difficult an early season fixture list they've had.
Yeah, and you look at Gabby only got about 25 minutes, less than that, he got about 20 minutes. Gamero and Torres didn't even get off the bench. Juanfran didn't get off the bench. So it's interesting. It's interesting to me how Simeone has played it so far, especially with the older guys in the team. Gamero, by the way, has played just 18 minutes this season. So not great for him.
Yeah, and I suppose he's coming back from his injury, and you don't want to rush it too much, especially when Correa's playing so well, and especially when you've got Torres there as well, if you do need an option from the bench. So yeah, I guess Simeone's just don't want to risk getting a further injury and bring them back too soon, so maybe just ease them in. And to be fair, there haven't been that many close games. There haven't been that many non-close games this season. So maybe against Las Palmas, when you're winning by lots of goals, fair enough, bring them on. But when you're 1-0 up against Malaga, just up by a couple of goals, and then one goal against Bilbao, drawing away at Roma, maybe that's not when you want to give them a run out because there's so much still in the line.
You mentioned Correa, and I think other than Lucas, he's the guy, and Tomas, he's the guy who has, benefited the most from Simeone's rotation policy. He scored again, his third goal already this season. He scored four all of last season. He just looks like a different player out there, and he finished off such a well-worked move between him, Koke, and Griezmann. This was just such a beautifully well-worked goal that he finished off. Koke completely took Kepa out of the play. And just with this awesome cutting pass, and then Correa just finished it off.
Yeah, it was a really nice move, and you don't want to read too much into the fact that he scored the goal, because the actual finish wasn't all that difficult, but his performance as well as getting on the end of that move and finishing it off, his general performance in that game was just as good as it has been the rest of the season. And yeah, he's definitely offering a lot of energy up front, and him and Griezmann are combining well, and yeah, it's nice to see the whole of the kind of attack in front of Atletico combining well with Koke as well. And when Carrasco came on, and not just last night but in other games as well, Carrasco and Griezmann and Correa and Koke and Saul as well from a little bit deeper, they've all been linking up really well. And there's been some really nice moves so far this season, and maybe it's just a shame that not all of them have been finished off like this one in Bilbao was.
Yeah, and that's, I think, one of the strengths of having this continuity and the stability, and I guess one of the benefits of not being able to sign players over the summer is that the players who are in the team who were there last year, they get another chance, they get more time together, and I think that's really benefited Correa. It's really benefited Tomas in this midfield. Tomas didn't play too well in this game because he had the early yellow card, and he kind of had to be careful, but You can see kind of the ripple effects already of this continuity, and hopefully it continues.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think even 10 years ago, you wouldn't expect a player to be performing at his best in his first season. You'd expect the best to come in the second season, but nowadays there's so much urgency, there's so much money involved that you almost can't afford to wait for a second season to see if the player really clicks, or in the case of Jackson, a couple of years ago, you can't really wait until after 6 months to see. You kind of just have to make a decision after a few months, and maybe you're right, maybe having that sort of temptation to go and find a replacement and see if they can slot in immediately better, maybe having that temptation taken away from you sort of brings out the best in the players that maybe needed a little bit of time to get used to the Atletico way, which is it's a bit more complex than it looks and takes some time to get used to. I mean, just look at Griezmann a couple of years ago. He had quite a poor first 6 months, and look how well he plays in that system now that he's had time to really get to know it.
And Griezmann, as we know, loves playing at Saint Mamés. He loves playing Athletic. They're one of his favorite victims. And he victimized them again with this just world-class assist to Carrasco less than 20 minutes after Correa's opening goal. This Athletic were just caught completely off guard by the throw-in, which if I were Cuca Zaganda, I would be screaming at them in training today. How do you get caught that off guard by a simple throw? But Atleti took advantage from a set play. Griezmann with just an outrageous flick onto Carrasco, who hammered it off the post and in, as he is wont to do.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great pass, but also just great control from Carrasco. I mean, this is, I think, one of those kind of ones that you sort of see the commentators arguing about in the NFL, where it's like, was it a great pass from the quarterback, or was it a great catch? And sometimes it can be both, and it was very much the case in this one, a great flick from Griezmann. But the way that Carrasco was able to, under a lot of pressure, tightly marked, able to bring that ball down and fire away that shot right into the perfect position as well, because Kepa was quite well positioned for a goal. The whole thing from start to finish was really nice to see.
Yeah, if you're Kepa, what are you going to do with that? I mean, that's mostly down to his defense and just Griezmann making an absolutely outrageous flick. I mean, just two so well-worked goals, and that Atletico don't really score enough. They have the capability to do so. And this is when people watch Atleti, it's boring football. It's pragmatic football, but they can do this. They can score these kinds of goals. We just don't see it often enough. They have these players.
Yeah, they definitely do. And almost what we said earlier, the way they've been linking up this season, I think we will see a few more of these.
Yeah, definitely. Raul García got the consolation goal in stoppage time. To be fair, he kind of deserved it. Athletic did deserve to get one, I think. He'd had a rough day at the office before then. Saul went to try to head the ball away. He missed it. And Balenciaga had just free range down the left-hand side because everyone got pulled toward the middle of the pitch. Jimenez and Tomas were both nowhere to be found. The cross came in and Rulo finished it off. Just not enough time, though, for Athletic to get a second, and Athletic get out of there with the win. Simeone's record against Athletic now, 12 wins, 2 draws, 1 defeat. That's pretty incredible. And he has never lost at San Mamés.
Yeah, and won Europa League as well.
And so, won Europa
League. He loves playing them almost as much as Griezmann does.
Yes, he does. This game also, Athletic's 15th consecutive game unbeaten away in domestic play. What do you think the secret is to this away success? 15 unbeaten dating back to last season in the league.
Yeah, I think it's just the intensity that they show under Simeone. There isn't really a shift in mentality when they play at home or when they play away, and I think that's one of the things that almost makes makes a whole stadium move. You've got a little bit more optimism to think that they can fit in really well, because even at the Calderon, they thrived on the support sometimes, but it was more so that kind of off-put opponents rather than spurred Atletico on, because Simeone wouldn't allow for them to only get pumped up for home games. So, the fact that they're so good on the road, it makes you think that new surroundings shouldn't really be a problem when they're playing at home over this first season at the Wanda Metropolitan.
It's a really, really impressive run. And even in this season, when they've played 4 of the first 5 in La Liga away because of the Wanda and because of getting that stadium open, they've already gone to Mestalla, got a creditable draw there, already went to San Mamés, won there. The Girona draw, it's going to look bad for a while. It's still going to look bad for several weeks. But other than that, Atleti, I think they've made a pretty good start to the season, considering they've had exactly one home game in all competitions.
Yeah, for sure. And I think by the end of the season, that Girona draw will look a little bit better. I mean, we saw how close Sevilla were to drawing that game. One penalty miss from Alex Grinnell away from drawing away at Girona as well. And Malaga have lost there. And we'll see how Barcelona do this weekend. But I think Girona is going to be a difficult place for every team to go. One of these small, unfamiliar stadiums. So, at the end of the season, maybe that 2 points dropped there will maybe actually look a bit more like a point gained.
It possibly could, because they look like they're going to be pretty strong at home. They really do. Felipe Luis had to leave the game about 10 minutes from time. They had a stretcher come out. I actually did not catch what had happened to him But I looked up and saw the stretcher out. I'm like, oh no, please don't be happening. But luckily the stretcher was called off. Felipe was able to walk off under his own power and Lucas came on for him. But he trained normally on Thursday. Looks like it was more of a precaution than anything. And looks like he's going to be set to go against Sevilla this weekend. So that's a relief.
Yeah, he was at an event, I think, for Adidas as well today in Madrid, and, you know, five-a-side kind of thing, and he scored a couple of goals in this thing, and, you know, if it was something serious, then there's no way the club would have allowed him to go to this event and take part in the kind of, you know, mini kickabout that they had. So, yeah, I think that was maybe just a scare. It seemed to be his calf that he was holding, but, yeah, it seems to be nothing too serious and should be back for this weekend's game.
Yeah, that is a relief. Let's talk a little bit about this weekend's game. Sevilla coming to the Wanda Metropolitano. This is going to be a big showdown. Sevilla haven't really... It's been weird for Sevilla. I don't think they've played very well to start the season, but 4 wins and a draw in 5 games. They've only conceded once.
Yes. You know, the longest streak undefeated for any new Sevilla manager ever, which is quite surprising considering, like you say, they haven't played all that well. And there's been very few games where they've won by more than one goal. I think against Eibar might be the only one. So they've been very sort of riding their luck a little bit, and there's definitely some weaknesses there to exploit. And yeah, I think it's going to be a really, really interesting match, because Atletico and Sevilla have sort of started the season with generally positively, but with a couple of issues lingering. And the fact that this one's an early kickoff as well, 1 p.m. We saw how atmospheric the Wanda was last weekend for the grand opening, and yeah, hopefully it can sort of keep that up, this 1 o'clock kickoff on the second week.
Yeah, I saw you were there for Marca before the pre-match festivities. What did you make of the stadium itself? What did you make of like the roadways, the transport links, basically everything that surrounds the stadium, both controversial and, you know, extraordinary?
Yeah, well, I mean, it looks really impressive. I wasn't there last weekend, but we'll be there for the Sevilla game, so I'll get a first look at the inside of it. But in terms of the outside, it looked really grand. Getting there was, you know, the metro works really well. That was, you know, not on the match day. I think there were quite a lot of queues, but that's to be expected. The big problem though is that the connections from the motorway aren't built yet. So when we were there just on that, you know, last Thursday night at kind of rush hour, the traffic was a chaos, and that's just a normal weekday. So I think traffic has been a bit of a concern. But yeah, the metro runs quite smoothly, and yeah, by all accounts, it was quite a night and quite a success inside as well. And you know, two teams will be finding that out at the 2019 Champions League final as well. And,
yes, they will.
If one of them were to be Atleti, then that would be quite a story.
Yes, they will. And this, despite the reports in the Spanish press earlier this week that the Wanda Metropolitano did not have enough VIP suites, but Enrique Cerezo trying to put the record straight yesterday, saying it had more VIP suites than any other stadium in the world. So who knows the truth?
Yeah, that sounds a little bit Donald Trumpy. You know,
exactly.
Criticism and just take it too extreme that no one actually is going to believe it. I'm sure it has, you know, enough VIP suites, but from going from UEFA saying it doesn't have enough to having the most in the world, that's... that must have been quite an overnight job to fix that.
Yeah, pretty amazing work to put in an extra 100 or, you know, 1,000 VIP suites, however many it was.
Yeah, exactly. But I think in the end what it came down to was, you know, some of the chaos that having a city maybe is like Cardiff last year caused, with not enough hotels, not being equipped, not enough transport links for fans to get there. I think that's... you know, maybe put them off Baku a little bit, and, you know, coming back to Madrid for the first time since 2010 when it was over at the Bernabeu.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a year away. Hopefully Atleti are in it. That'd be pretty cool to see. Of course, it would be very Atleti of them to get there and lose. But
that is true. I think that is the worry, but yeah.
Yeah.
That's why they just need to win it this year and get the monkey off the back.
Exactly. I like the way you think, Ewan. As far as Saturday goes, yeah, it is early kickoff, which is not very good for me in Arizona, because that's 5 a.m. my time.
For sure.
Yeah. Ugh. I'm not looking forward to Saturday morning. But, alas, it's a labor of love, Ewan, as you know.
Exactly.
What's your scoreline prediction for Saturday?
Yeah, I think it'll be quite low scoring again. You know, again, two of the better defenses in the league, and yeah, I think it'll be 1-0, but I'm not quite sure who for. I think Atleti will probably have enough to nick this, but Sevilla have just been so sort of resilient, even when they've not played well, that yeah, you have to worry that they could find another way to win another Jesus Navas deflected own goal. Is it a goal? One of those kind of things. What about you, Jeremy? What are you predicting?
Ooh, it's a tough one. It is going to be low scoring, I think. But I'm going to go with 1-0, and 1-0 Atleti. Let's go with 1-0 Atleti. I don't like to pick Atleti losses on the show. I have done it before. Yeah. I usually don't like to, but I'll go with 1-0 Atleti. It's going to be a big showdown, especially this early in the season. You get the second and third place teams going at it. Well, possibly second and fourth if Real Sociedad beat Levante tonight. But it's still going to be a pretty big clash. And then after that, Atleti have Chelsea midweek. That's going to be huge, not just because of the recently concluded Costa saga, but it is the Champions League. It's the first Champions League game at home. It's going to be pretty wild. So two big games coming up on the horizon. Pretty exciting.
Yeah, exactly. Busy weekend, yeah. Once they get those out of the way, you know, eventually there'll be a sort of kinder part of the fixture list to navigate.
Well, before we get out of here, Ewan, let's talk a little bit about your book, which is coming out very soon.
Yeah, sure. This weekend, this very weekend.
Yay!
Yeah, so, about Atletico Madrid's sort of recent success, hijacking La Liga, it's called, how Atletico Madrid brought the Barcelona and Real Madrid's duopoly on Spanish football. It kind of does what it says in the tin. It starts kind of looking at when they got relegated in the year 2000 and what exactly is that the club have done to turn things around, both at a boardroom level, both at a playing staff level. Bringing in Diego Simeone obviously has had a massive impact, and you know, just some of the players that they've been able to get their hands on and how important they've been. So yeah, just really taking a sort of look through all the different aspects, 10 different aspects, from you know, the youth academy to the captaincy, to the kind of players they look for, to the coaching staff, you know, all sorts of different aspects that have sort of played into, you know, the La Liga title they won in 2014, and obviously the two Champions League finals they reached as well. So yeah, I think, you know, a lot of Atletico fans will find that quite interesting, and non-Atletico fans as well, because yeah, for a team to really just, you know, challenge Barcelona and Real Madrid when they were at their absolute peak, you know, after a couple of 100-point La Liga seasons, for someone to come along and take it off them was really quite momentous.
Hijacking La Liga. It has my endorsement. I haven't even read it yet. Go buy it. I'm going to buy it. I'm sure it's going to be a fantastic read, Ewan. Can't wait to read it.
Cheers, Jeremy.
So that is Ewan McTeer. You can follow him on Twitter at emcteer. That's E-M-C-T-E-A-R. I'll ask him to stick around for just a second while I conclude the sign-off message. You can follow me, Jeremy Barron, your host, on Twitter at jbbarron, J-B-B-E-R-E-N. Follow Into the Calderon at Into the Calderon, and like Into the Calderon on Facebook at facebook.com/Into the Calderon. Colchonero Chat, you can find it on a variety of podcasting platforms, including iTunes, Stitcher, Acast, Google Play, and TuneIn. As far as iTunes is concerned, please leave a rating and a review there. Helps our visibility, helps us get noticed, and helps, in a way, keep the program running. Also helping to keep the program running is our Patreon page, patreon.com/Colchonero Chat, if you are interested in supporting the show. Lots of cool benefits to being a patron, like Chris Galvez. Chris gets exclusive images of the podcasting process. He gets exclusive polls as a patron, and a lot more. So patreon.com/Colchonero Chat is the place to be if you want to contribute to the show and give back like we give the show to you every week. We'll be back next week to talk Atleti and Sevilla. Until then, adios.